So recording has started. I'll start the meeting. This is an OEMR board meeting, Wednesday, April 18th, 2018, 6:10 Pacific time. First, we'll do call to order with the roll call. So I'll just go through. Jit?
Here.
Asher? Robert?
Talking to Robert right now. He said here.
Okay. Daniel?
Here.
Sherwin?
Here.
Lou? Shamim? Brady? Here. Senna? Roberto?
Here.
Matthew?
Here.
Steven?
Here.
And then Scott. Great. So the next thing is, so we're going to bump the prior meeting minutes to the next meeting. The secretary's been very busy with school, so we'll go through all those next meeting. Next section is financial report, so I'll leave it to Steven.
Okay, thanks, Brady. I uploaded the financials a little while ago. There's not much going on. I think we're now officially revoked as a 501c3. It's all done. There's no going back.
All right, congrats, guys. We did it.
Yes.
That's right.
Celebration.
Worked out just like, you know, we drew it up. I will save my 501c6 deal for the new business.
Okay. We'll go to unfinished business. So the first one is cloud partnerships. I'll go through that. So we have two cloud kind of partnerships with AWS and Google at this point. AWS, there is one, you know, we have five sort of packages. One's on Marketplace, and we have another one on Marketplace we're trying to get called Standard, but it's been very tough. Amazon is simply not returning any emails. So I'm not sure where to go with that, but I'm just going to keep trying to contact them to try and get that out there in Marketplace. Asher's not on, but at some point we may just have to release Standard as a non-Marketplace option, which I think we have the documentation to do that if we need to, but it would definitely be ideal to do Marketplace because you can do tracking and all these other kinds of things, show how many people are using it and that kind of stuff. So that would be ideal. So we'll keep working on that. And then Google, you know, there's a Google Cloud Launcher, which is like Marketplace, and we're working with Google to get a cloud offering there too. So that's the cloud partnerships. Any questions?
Just so everyone knows, I told Matt this, but for my job, I'm not like as good an OS level sysadmin as Asher, but I do full-time AWS consulting. I moved to Deloitte. So if you guys have any questions at AWS, like that is, in my last job, I did a bunch of random stuff, but I do full-time nothing but AWS. Like I'm sick of it when I go home, but I like showing up for these calls. So if you guys have any questions, and Jit, I saw your email about AWS, please let me know.
Have you ever done Marketplace stuff?
Actually, you know, no, I'm going to undercut my credibility here, but no, I have not.
Because I would probably have questions about Marketplace because I'm working on.
Well, I don't think that's fair to say it undercuts your credibility because if you think about it, most organizations build their own infrastructure on AWS. They're not publishing their apps, right? This is kind of a bespoke thing for open source and common packages that others share. So,
and it's just procedural stuff.
Yeah, that's Matt.
Is that Matt talking? Okay.
I'm just defending you. I think you have a lot of experience. So.
Yeah, okay. This is Brady. I'll still consider you a guru in all the AWS stuff too.
Yes. Okay. I have the highest level AWS cert, so like I'm not, you know, full of. I'm a guru.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. I'm assuming Google Cloud though is a little different. Although I don't know if you've seen the Google Cloud, it's pretty nice. how it works.
Yeah, it's a relief after Azure, like, really confuses me, and it's probably because I don't have that much of a Microsoft background. So I enjoy Google Cloud.
Yeah.
Google Six.
But yeah, that's the cloud stuff. Next item is marketing. Anyone have any stuff for marketing? There's one thing we want to talk about, using the word free in our marketing material, but any other stuff besides that?
So I just want to call out for the record. I know everybody on the call is up to date on this stuff, but we are still celebrating a successful launch of our latest version of OpenEMR, version 5.0.0 patch 8, I believe. It's the DICOM web viewer release. So now, thanks to Victor, Jerry, Brady, and some other folks, we can view DICOM images right in OpenEMR's document feature. So I've been very...
Hey man, anybody can do this. You go under patients and you go under search and you just start typing in, you know, the first letter.
Okay, he's... go ahead.
Was that a question or...
No, I think just talking to...
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. It's all good. So I was just saying we put a good amount of marketing effort into that, and the team was really great. So, you know, that's a marketing update. And I guess we are working on version 2 now, which will include PAX integration. I'm like, you know, ridiculously busy with my crazy startup job that keeps me busy. So I've been basically being a project manager and an engineering lead in the sense where I've been just advising folks and giving them tasks. So it's been going along smoothly. I hope to get that release done sometime this year, probably in the next few months. And we'll have another round of marketing and other kind of artifacts as a result of that. But that was really my only update around marketing. We really tried to present that as a nice package.
Any other, other marketing would be the release 5.0.1 will come out hopefully this weekend. That's the hope. Things look good.
Did we ever nail a theme, or is that going to be too?
The theme is going to be this. There's 100 themes, I guess, is going to be the theme.
I'm fine with that. That's about right.
I don't know. I've written a rough draft of just the release, and pretty much like the strategy is just saying how huge amount of stuff could we have now, or all the huge amount of new stuff. And I even kind of brought in the stuff the community's done. So let me know how you think it works, but it's just a rough draft. But so I even brought in, you know, the Dockers, the cloud, health hacks, your talk at the Wonka.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I think we need to be flashy with these because that's what will help us make Hacker News and other outlets too, of course. But I know, like, it just as a religious reader of Hacker News, normally every other day you see, maybe every week you see a really popular open source project that has just literally the post of the name of the project and then the version number, and then everybody's talking about it and it's on the front page. So if we want to kind of follow suit, I think that would be wise. So we should put as much interesting stuff in there as we can.
And I'll probably talk with Robert about getting some sort of picture. I don't even know what, let's see what he thinks about it. But that'll be for the release. And then one thing that's been brought up a couple times is using the word free in our marketing. There's two arguments why we shouldn't use it. And there's several arguments why it's okay to use it. I think the first argument of why we shouldn't use it is just it gives OpenEMR, some people think that, you know, it's kind of a bad word to use the word free. It makes it sound like it's substandard. Then the second argument is that if you're using meaningful use, there are actually fees for licensing to be able to use NewCrop and a couple other things. So any thoughts on use of the word free?
I think we should just throw it out to the community and make a discussion, or at least a page somewhere where it kind of goes through what's been discussed. But, you know, that way people have some context and just diffuse the whole situation, you know, and realize that this is something that's philosophical yet practical, you know, combined, and it just makes for murky, you know, like a murky view of what it is we're trying to do.
Do you think we should maybe reach out to the Free Software Foundation just to tell them that we're talking about this and also try to network with them? Because we are GPL licensed and FSF really tends to favor GPL licensed projects. I mean, they're pretty rough about things. Like, they consider Ubuntu, you know, not really open source, for instance. Even Debian, they have a lot of problems with. So the point is they should be our ally, and it would be kind of cool to not only try to see what their thoughts are on this, but maybe also network with them and potentially create some opportunities. I'm just throwing ideas out there.
It'd be nice. I mean, you could, and then you see what they say, and they'll probably like having someone ask that. You know, because it's not like we're, I mean, the only issue is if someone tries to use it as an ONC certified product, you know, you have to use a third party. But I'm on the fence. I'm happy to do whatever the community wants to do in this. I don't feel strongly either way.
I mean, I'm bringing up a totally, other topic, of course, but
yeah.
It is useful because they might be able to give us some context about what to write and a practical way for a layman person to say, oh, I see how it's free. You know, it's not necessarily free in every way, but I have my freedoms, I guess.
We could always change free to freedom. I'm sure Robert is just, he can't talk right now, but I'm sure he's not very happy about that.
All right. So Robert asked he's saying no mic today. So I'm just going to read his message. He said, free is good and more important than ONC, which is also important. We should push this out to the community. And he considers that, you know, OpenEMR being free is our first and foremost marketing attribute rather than ONC. And I can agree with that. I personally am on the side of, I prefer the word open source rather than saying free, by the way, just in case anybody wants to know my opinion. But it seems like the consensus is let's just put the word free out to the community and see what they say. And then I'm just going to reach out to the FSF to get their thoughts. And it's mainly just to get networking with them, because I think it would be good for us to be listed on their website as a GPL project or something.
Sounds like a good plan. Any other thoughts?
I support the open source wording. I think it sounds more elegant, maybe more professional.
Well, I was going to say, why can't we just keep them together, free open source, rather than one or the other? They should stay combined together.
That's actually a really good idea. I feel like that is a compromise and it might actually work. But
yeah, you
people
could
do people actually say that though, like in conversation, whether it's online or in person, do people actually say, oh, I just tried this free open source package the other day? I don't know if people actually say that.
I do. And yes, they do. And it's more of, like you said previously, a layperson, someone who really isn't a part of, let's say, a developer group, and so would actually know the difference between free and paid. But most people, if they're going to say something, especially if they're talking to somebody else, just in the layperson type of way, well, I found this free open source, whereas versus, well, I found this software and part of it was free and I had to pay for this. You know, that may come up in a conversation too, but usually you're going to lead out, and it's just kind of like that American thing. We want to, just like we buy something, we rarely tell them how much we paid for shipping. We just tell them how much we paid for the item, even though we may have paid almost as much to shipping. So we're just going to tell them I paid this much for this item. So they're going to say free because it's one of those things that just tickles the senses.
That's a really good analogy, actually. You know, it's I paid $19.95, but I didn't mention that I paid $20 in shipping. That's kind of what, like, the open source part is, I guess. I see what you're saying. I think that's something I'm going to kick around in my head, actually, because I might be able to live with that, because I know you've been working with OpenEMR for a while, and you've talked to a lot of lay people, so I kind of trust your judgment there. You've probably experimented with a few variations, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Robert just messaged me. He's saying, strongly taking the open source purism perspective,
That free is far more important than anything having to do with ONC, especially with our international audience. So I think he's talking about, like, there's two partitions to this argument. There's the one that we're talking about, like, what should we call ourselves, free or open source, or free open source, as Sherwin just recommended. And then the other side that he's talking about now is, should we put some, like, asterisks next to ONC and mention, oh, yeah, there's some, you know, there's actually some licensing costs that aren't open EMR costs, but they are other related component costs. So it sounds like he's saying that we need to focus on this, you know, we need to focus on marketing ourselves as free open source in the most elegant way. And he just wrote back saying we should probably put some sort of asterisk next to ONC to expand on what that actually means. But it sounds like he's more focused on the wording.
I think the asterisk, that's fine. And then you could just link it to the section. You know, there's a section in the wiki, or you could pull that out and put it on the page where it just goes over. It's actually what we actually have to do. MU makes us put what it costs to add the other items on to make it ONC certified. So we actually have a section, we have text that says what each item costs, like New Crop and EMR Direct and the ZH Mirth Engine, and even the portal we have to put on there, even though it's free. So we could do, that wouldn't be too tough to support that, the asterisk.
Yeah, Brady, what are your thoughts on Sherwin's recommendation?
I think, I mean, I'm okay with, again, I'm on the fence, but I think an asterisk sounds fine. I think free sounds fine. I think not, if you want to change free to something else, you know, there is something about the word free that most people probably like to see. I think we're, you know, a lot of people in the tech world are a little bit, you know, we went through freeware and all that other kind of stuff, and usually that was kind of junk. So I think a lot of us are a little biased from that perspective, I suppose. And maybe lay people aren't biased.
I know some people try to bridge the gap with like FOSS, the FOSS community, you know, free and open source.
Right. Yeah, I actually used that for a while, like just in communicating with others, not for open EMRs marketing materials, but I feel like that makes a lot of sense to, like what Brady was saying, to tech people, but maybe not to, you know, your layperson.
And a lot of, you know, if you really think about the trend now, you have all these people that are coming from a free product that are looking for a free product. So there's also that going on too.
It's almost like a marketing campaign in itself. Like you could put like FOSS always and forever and just be like, you know, what the heck are they talking about?
Yeah, that is a good idea because, you know, it's kind of like a commercial. You know, commercials are always loud and they kind of, you know, get your attention. This kind of gets your attention, but it's subtle. That just might be a good idea. I don't know.
So I like the idea. We could kick this to the forum and see what people say. I don't think there's any rush to do anything. I think we could figure out what to do and then.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that's a good call. And then I also am really kicking around Sherwin's idea because even if you think about it, he's talking to, you know, users that are, you know, not programmers all the time. And I don't know if they would understand what FOSS meant, but they do understand free open source software. So I think that's a really good point. We'll definitely write that down.
Any other thoughts on the word free? So we'll move on to, I guess we don't really have much in the way of conference outreach going on, unless someone has something to add for that. Then we'll move on to the next section, raising funds.
So I guess I could talk a little bit about that in a way. Well, it might be premature, of course, but it sounds like we're going to be kicking off a partnership with a few folks that are interested in open EMR in the academic setting. And I just want to let everybody know that it seems feasible that we might be able to work with some informatics programs around the country to raise some funds to help, you know, them integrate open EMR into their classrooms with open EMR EDU. And so I was thinking that would be a really nice way to kind of get started with a sustainable funding source. Not much, but just enough to kind of get started. And then maybe through that and all the connections we make, we'll be able to you know, have an easier time with grants. So these are some things I've been working on and thinking about. Not necessarily any update, really, but I'm just trying to share my my take as of right now.
Yeah, that sounds like good news.
This is Jit. I think that the open EMR EDU is kind of an interesting idea, but like a lot of places have EDUs, like McDonald's, Farmers Insurance, everybody has some kind of university. But the thing is that there's so much stuff in open source available on the wiki and videos and stuff. So would you feel like having like a university thing would be appealable or marketable? I mean, well, I think
it's a little bit different because basically we're actually trying to really like link arms with the heads of these departments, because right now, I'll give you an example. We've been talking to George Mason University, who has a limited budget and can no longer deal with, you know, paying for Practice Fusion. So they want to switch to OpenEMR, and they've been a longtime friend of the project. So by doing that, we can work with them to kind of get their, you know, systems running, whether they use cloud or install it on their own server. We can support that with, you know, virtual machines and Docker or what have you. But then we'll be able to kind of use their, basically be able to use the, you could tell I haven't worked out the elevator pitch for this yet, but just bear with me. We'll be able to work with them to understand, you know, what are some common homework assignments for the students, and maybe even give them little tasks, you know, because these students need to learn how to program because they're going into informatics programs. And so OpenEMR affords them that opportunity. So it could really open up a lot of doors for us in the academic usage, in terms of academic usage, which would be just outstanding from a marketing perspective. And I think it would also improve the software, because I'm sure there's going to be some like bespoke or common really features that aren't in place that the teachers are wanting to using, are going to want to teach with. So yeah, I hope that kind of answers your question.
I think I was on a different track, the question. I thought it was just simply like referring to using OpenEMR, but this is, you know, I actually got cut from the call. My phone is acting up. So I have a call for like 15, 20 minutes and just got back on. So yeah, it answers my question. I understand what it is now.
I didn't do a great job of answering
the
question.
Not even relevant to the answer. Yeah.
And well, so, this is Brady. It can translate to clinical use. Like that university is also going to use it in their sort of low resource clinic scenarios. So when you get in if you're in the university setting, a lot of times you'll have those kinds of clinics where they could translate to getting clinical use too.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, if the students know OpenEMR, they can use it in the workforce, which is amazing.
And or even like George Mason going to use it in their clinics at the same time. So they can use this as sort of a link between their IT department and their students can actually support OpenEMR for a real life clinic. That those kind of situations is probably what she's trying to also set up.
And then just two more quick points. One is I believe, and Robert can correct me if I'm wrong, but the person we were talking to, Robin, who's from George Mason, told us that there's people that graduate in some like master's level informatics classes that don't have any real experience with EMRs. So that was kind of telling, and I think we can really help out, and by doing so, it will improve the education and therefore improve healthcare in America. So I think that's really cool. The second point I wanted to make is the ultimate thing that I want to produce is I'm trying to find some folks in the open source community that would help me volunteer to help put together a landing page called OpenEMR EDU, basically. And then this is a super easy website to navigate as a person, such as somebody, you know, heading up a department at George Mason. And then they can instantly hand off some resources to their students, and they can almost instantly, you know, within 5 minutes, run an instance of OpenEMR Cloud Express and get to some assignments. Robert just sent a message. He's saying that he believes OpenEMR EDU is 100% marketable because of the ability for us to pair with the universities to develop curriculums and integrated assignments. And he is personally going to be taking a lead on the academic area of this, because it's something that he's personally and professionally interested in as a graduate in the next 2 years. So, he's pursuing a health informatics graduate degree in the next 2 years. So it would really make sense for what he's doing.
That sounds good.
Where that all goes into fundraising, I had a long day, my brain's dead, but there is a point to this. We'll be able to probably put together some small little grants and donations and things like that as we make more connections and have more success and more universities hear about us and want to join in.
Sounds good. All avenues that can potentially get funding are good avenues. Any other raising fund stuff by anybody? If not, we'll move on to, we're going to skip the next three because I know Secretary's been busy. But we're going to go on to the next one, funding for fire. Jerry's still working on this. Actually, he had to take a little bit of a break because of the release, fixing some bugs in CCDA and portals and things like that. So, and helping me with other bugs. But that project's still going. Again, there's already a little bit of code in the code base. So we can even say in the release that we have fire support. It's not much. It basically will push fire. You can, have a fire server set up and push records to it. But at least it's something. And again, there's two more steps we're trying to shoot for where we can actually import data, which will be important, especially for bringing in patient sample data. And then also supporting apps using SmartFire. But those are down the pipeline. Funding, we haven't really gotten to that point yet. There was a private funding of $1,000, which he's already done that work. And when he gets to the point of step two, then he gets another $1,000, then step three, another $1,000, but that's further down the road. The next item is funding for lab requisition form. I think, I reviewed that code, and I think I'm still waiting for a next revision on that code. So unless, I think that's where I'm at with that, unless Sherwin has. Is that correct?
No, I'll go take a look at it.
Okay.
I haven't looked at it in a while, so I didn't know there was another revision. I'll go take a look.
Yeah. Does anyone have questions on funding stuff? Then we'll move on to new business, and I'll let Steven take over.
Okay, thanks, Brady. Just going to have a members meeting, and it's time for an annual members meeting, and we can discuss our change to a different tax classification. So if we can approve to have the annual member meeting next month to precede the board meeting, we'll have plenty of time to get our amendments in place and out. So that, Brady, correct me if I'm wrong, but pretty much all the members are like board members.
So yeah, we'll have a couple that. Let me look here. There's one. I think we have one that's that's still a member but not a board member who I was never able to say they were off the list. Kevin, I think, but I think otherwise, everyone else is pretty much a board member.
We just need to do a 2-week warning. So if we put it out there, pretty soon, we'll have warned it, and we can put up the agenda, which is going to be pretty quick. And I don't anticipate taking much time. And that way, we'll have checked off one of the requirements for North Carolina state law to have the members approve the structural change and file the amendment with them and then get to work on the IRS form.
So great. Have the articles been changed already, or do we still have to work on that?
I've got the drafts. I haven't posted them.
Okay.
I've just been playing around with the wording, and the IRS guy, our appeals officer, gave me a couple tips. He's trying to be a really nice guy. Out in like Salt Lake City or somewhere. But anyways, so I'll put those amendments up. There's a couple documents we have to file, but I think, we can pretty much do this all on our own for the OEMR. And, cause we get a lot of experience, believe it or not. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't know how badly this can go and haven't been able to learn from all the mistakes. So I'm quasi hopeful.
And then for the announcement, I just changed our agenda there where it says next annual member meeting and monthly board meeting on May 9th, 2018. I don't know if that's enough, but it's on our...
Sounds good.
It's on our forum thread, so I think it's been announced. So we can, for the two-week thing. That sounds great. Anyone have questions or issues with organization restructuring? So move on, next section, which is public and community concerns. I don't think we have anyone outside the board here, so probably none, unless someone wants to bring something up. And next section is just announcing the next annual member meeting and the monthly board meeting are both going to be on the same day on May 9th, 2018. Make sure that's right. And then next is just to adjourn the board meeting. Unless someone has something to bring up, I'm gonna stop recording.
Well, this is Jit. If you have like a couple of minutes,
so I'm gonna keep recording. Is this for the board meeting? Otherwise, I'm gonna stop.
Well, I got kicked off for 15 minutes.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
And so I don't know if you guys talked about cloud or feedback, but some of you know maybe Brady and Asher and some other people that through my clients have had quite a bit of interaction. I've also been in touch with Jerry, who's been helping me with the HIE project in North Carolina and some of the commits for CCD. So as far as a couple of things that, and again, we're not very familiar with the Docker system, but one of the issues that my clients had is that we're moving from Practice Fusion into OpenEMR. And so currently the CCDs, the Practice Fusion CCDs have encounter data in it, but we're not able to import it into OpenEMR, number one. Number two, feedback is that because the stack and the template, you know, and I appreciate all the work and it's really good that you were able to get it. We were able to get to the point of now having cloud formation for OpenEMR, very helpful, but it's on the T2 micro small. And according to Amazon engineers, if you want more memory capacity, you have to actually rewrite in the template. Everything is to the template, or you have to link it to a load balancer. And if you have to do it to a load balancer, you also have to rewrite the template. So I'm just saying that I've and I can talk a little bit more too offline too, but I've got quite a bit of feedback using the system. We upgraded to 5.01, so we've been using that. And, you know, I just think that it's a blessing to have a stack in a way and, you know, with the Docker system and the benefits, but there are a number of things that I've had to maneuver through, figure out, and just feedback for the next, you know, I don't know if there's going to be more Docker work being done for the next releases or whatever. But and then, of course, if you know, the next release with the CCDA, if encounters can be, you know, part of it, that would be good. At least, like, there's some EMRs like Practice Fusion where, you know, because, you know, right now what we're trying to do is get the demographics in, but then we're going to have to figure out a way to get the PDF of the encounter visits and just upload it to the documents directory in OpenEMR unless somebody else has a solution to how to put them in there. But obviously the client needs that, right? They need the demographics, and then they need all the visits.
Right, all the clinical. I have a couple quick on the Practice Fusion. I guess I was told the structure of the date in the encounter was not compatible with what the import was. So I'm guessing that wouldn't be too tough to adjust. This is interesting though. Wait, when you talk about PDFs, is that the dump from Practice Fusion, or are you just using CCDAs at this point?
We're just using CCDAs at this point, and as many of you in the EMR doing EMR for a while know, that a lot of the vendors give you heartache about getting, even though legally it's required, you know, a lot of clients don't know their rights and they don't push it. And so my client, I told him to get a CD from Practice Fusion, but it's taken them like 6 weeks and they need to go live on OpenEMR before that. So it is just a CCDA that we're talking about. It does contain encounter data. I think that the dump will contain more data. I would hope that a vendor could just go ahead and quickly provide that. If we could take the whole dump and take some information and just directly put it into the database, that would be easy. But, you know, through the CCDA, like I said, I'm thankful for what we have. And I know ZH has done a lot of work and Jerry's done a lot of work and all that, but you know, I'm literally having to go ahead and import each patient by patient. Now you can sit there and hit control and get 10, 12 patients. And then you have to go in after it come up and then add patient, you know, individually.
So there's no way to batch. So you want a way to batch.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you should, I'll send you an email with it. We have a thread now that's following like the Practice Fusion migration stuff. We've gotten a couple, one of them, I think probably Jerry told me about the effective date issue with the counters or the date structure. Another one is that the CCDAs aren't bringing in like all the data. They're not bringing in all the clinical data, like past medical history. So unstructured data is not in there. And that's, there's a good email by, I forgot who I took it from, but I put it on there just to show people what's going on. And it's that's why we're really interested to see what a data dump actually looks like. Is it just PDFs, which is going to make things tougher? But obviously, you know, it'd be nice for somebody went through it and kind of, because once you do one, right, it'll be a lot easier to do another one and another
one. Yeah, and I'll share the feedback once we get the
So, because I think when we see that, I don't know, you know, the CCDAs I'm a little bit skeptical about, because you may be able to get demographic data in simple, it sounds like structured forms. Now, will a SOAP form on Practice Fusion go right to a SOAP form on Open EMR? Doubtful. That's going to require, that's why I think once you have the CCDAs, it's likely going to require some work with a developer in the engine to make sure that they come through right, and also to obviously bring in a way to batch it. So you're doing, you know, 1,000.
There's
going
to have to be a mapping. From that. And the other issue is that, and I don't know yet, like right now, I got some feedback from Jerry too, that, you know, the reason why if I'm doing like this, they have 400 charts. So 400 patients actually. So if I'm doing 10 or 12 at a time, and then you have to make sure you do it in a small batch and hit add patient. Otherwise, the system lodges up. So I thought that was a memory issue. And I went into the Linux and I looked at the memory. And it was 50% use, 50% not. But Docker uses a lot of memory. And there are other resources that use a lot of memory. So I'm wondering that if we have it, the stack built on a T2 micro, small. And Amazon saying is that for the template, to get it to a bigger AMI or to actually get a load balance, you have to make modifications to the template. They won't do it, of course, because it's a third-party application. So yeah, I'm just kind of giving feedback in the future.
On the Amazon,
about, like right now, we don't even have all the data. Once we get all the data in, I don't know for my clients. I mean, these guys have three sites, and I mean three clinics. I'm sorry, and each clinic has 8 locations. Huge, and so we're talking about 3,000 patients. You know. And you know, I mean, that may not be a typical Open EMR customer, but if we can support that, and particularly as we're interested in institutional clients and stuff, that'd be great. So I, on one hand, I'm like Asher and Brady and everybody done a great job, but I'm just giving feedback, like, you know, for the future that, you know, if we can figure out a way to get it on
that should be flexible. Thing. The, whether you do T2 medium, T2 large, that should all be flexible. So I'm a little confused why they're saying it's hard-coded. I wish Asher were here because he's the one who wrote all this stuff. But I'm pretty sure on the marketplace items, like Express, definitely you get to select. And I'm sure standard you get to pick. Full stack, I don't know.
You'll have to specify it, though, in the CloudFormation template. There's a way to specify, you know, which tier you want of instance type.
Yeah.
When you're first going through it,
to change the instance size, you would change maybe like 10 characters in the CloudFormation template. And for background, like 4 hours of my day was writing CloudFormation a day. And even then, you can go into the AWS console itself, and the instance will shut down if you do this briefly and then reboot. But you can just via the GUI increase the instance size.
Yeah, I would do that right now, actually, because you could just benefit from it right now. But when you actually are ready for prod, take a backup of everything, redo your CloudFormation with like those 10 characters change that Daniel mentioned, and then you'll be good. I would definitely not try to spin up a load balance or anything. I don't think standard will not work with that. If you want that, it would be full stack, but I think standard will be totally sufficient for your needs. And but yeah, if you don't mind, just put everything in an email, like all the feedback in an email, and send it out.
Sure.
So this is great.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, just clarify.
If 10 characters can be identified, then that's great. We could go and just change it if it's that simple. But you have to choose the instance size then, right? You're saying predicted. It's not auto-scaling. It's not like, okay, as you need more space or memory, it will increase it. Is there a way to do that where You know, because sometimes you might predict, okay, instead of a small, I need a medium, you know, size, you know, instance, and then you might need more than that because, you know, more data Daniel, put in over time.
Yeah, I think Daniel said you can change it. That's why I'm wondering why AWS is.
He's talking about Elastic resources, though.
Well, no, automatic. Yeah. Like, if you want to.
No.
I wouldn't automatic that stuff.
Just for background, like, my job now is full-time AWS consulting. So that's like all I do. I don't know how. There are a couple of ways Azure might have configured it, because when the instance restarts, does Docker restart automatically? I assume he would have done that, but those are things
yes.
you have to make sure of.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. No, then that's great. Yeah. What you would do to do it Elastic, you'd have to be willing to go through like a 10-minute very safe shutdown, and then you could bring it up again as bigger. If you wanted it dynamic, like no downtime, I don't know how OpenEMR is configured, but Brady, Matt, then you get into like a load balancing stateless configuration.
We support that. Yeah, it's not with standard though, that's with full stack. So with full stack, just as Daniel said, it will actually spin up other servers and it will put a load balancer in front. But standard is not designed for load balancing.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's already there.
For some reason, we weren't comfortable using full stack yet for production, right? Might be something in the future. That's what I was told. That's why I went back to standard. Or what's the deal with full stack now? For other clients.
I think my opinion would be, this is Brady, I think standard would be the way to, I don't know if anyone has an opinion, but that's kind of the newer one. And it doesn't give you like all the punch that full stack does, but I think it's more straightforward and you can basically upscale it to however large of a processor you need, unless you really are an enterprise and you have a huge amount of people hitting it at once or something. Unless someone else has an opinion, it seems like standard would be the recommendation.
Yeah, I think that's a good recommendation. I would just put the caveat, you should definitely make your own CloudFormation template with the new instance size. And give yourself a good one, like one of the more expensive ones, because for production at least.
Yeah. And is there any way is there any way, I know this is maybe a security thing purposely done, but you know, when you reset Docker, you get to go back in permissions and assign permissions. Is that something that's just inherent in Docker, or is that something that there's a value to in the future to have it such that it's not going to reset? Because every time, like, we have to restart Docker because we make some changes, you know, reflect in the system, then we have to go back and put permissions in. So is that something that I'm just curious, Brady?
That's just the way that the Docker is written. Because actually, I just went through, Jerry asked me that question. I didn't realize it was happening every single time the Docker resets. But when the Docker does the automatic initiation, like it automatically configures OpenEMR and gets everything going, it makes it super secure. Yeah. So it deletes all the files like setup, and then it does not give write privileges to site default. It gives write privileges to site default documents and some other ones, but not site default, because that's a vulnerability if you have that, right? Because then people can load PHP into your config file.
So it's purposely done for security, yeah.
It's done for security. Now the question is, do we need to do it every time the Docker resets? And when I think about it, we may be doing that. I don't think we need to do that, obviously, because the user should be able to mess things up and change things and keep that state. So we need to look at our Docker and make sure we don't do that after the first configuration. I think we may be, though, when I think about it, the way the script is written. That's good feedback, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's enough for me. Thanks a lot. I'll send an email, and we can follow up on that.
Thanks, Jed. We're still on recording. Anyone else had something to bring up before I stop recording?
Yeah. I'll bring up two quick things. One, considering my job now, I should read more about the AWS stuff. Like, so I'll read all that, and then hopefully I can help and troubleshoot people out as stuff comes up with Azure. Actually, everything. Same thing is, at some point, if we can upgrade the Rocket Chat server, if that's a huge ask, don't worry about it. I'd like it on my phone, and I'm sure the newer version has, you know, I think the reason it's requiring it is because it's like a security thing or something. I'm not familiar with Rocket Chat, so I don't know. It's from 0.52 to 0.54.
We'll put it on the queue. What we're trying to do is get a nice backup mechanism set up for RocketShack first before we do that. But I think it makes sense to keep it upgraded like we do with Discourse. Okay. But
And the other thing, this is final. Oh no, Matt, go ahead.
No. You did say you had two things. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Denigrated is the third because I forgot about the RocketShack. The third thing is, if you guys were at the RSA conference is going on right now in San Francisco, and the CEO of Avast did a presentation, and I don't know if any of you guys use Macs, but there's a tool on there called CC Cleaner or something. I have it. I don't know. I can't say the name, but anyway, that tool, which is, it's been around for 10 years. It's very, very popular. It's like a cult following in Mac, and Avast bought out the company, the Avast security company. 3 months ago, there was an infected malware piece put in CC Cleaner's code. I think they like faked the digital signing certificate or something. So it was like a corruption of the software supply chain. You know, you think about this when you get pirated software, right? But not like, you know, nice soft, like paid software that's now owned by a security company or anything. But something I'd like this organization to look at, and I can take on this work because part of my job is, you know, hardening these environments and stuff, is like all the stuff that we have hosted, the GitHub, everything, you talked about that, and that's secure and everything, but like the files people download online, the SSL certs we use and where they're stored, the backups, which were just mentioned a second ago, like how does that architecture all work and everything? I don't know, maybe some architects, great architects set all this up, and this is something we need to worry about, but you know, I have bandwidth and stuff, and I think this is something important to look at. Especially people in third world countries use this, right? And some of their information, I think, is much more important because they live with questionable governments than maybe in the United States.
Yeah, I've definitely recommended CCleaner to Windows users over the years, probably the last decade or so, half decade or so. But yeah, it's hard, honestly, to get the fair understanding of the people using OpenEMR without, you know, the cloud or whatever, because it's just like Firefox or something. You can just download it. You never have to tell Mozilla you're using it and how you're using it. So I don't know. Maybe
or the hosted OpenEMR website. The hosted OpenEMR, so open-emr.org, right? Because we have demo instances running there. I think people download the binaries from there or from SourceForge, but those must come from somewhere.
This is Brady. Yeah, so they come from source. Like the files come from SourceForge. There are patches, but those are on the actual. So the website is actually hosted on. I'm blanking on the name. We had migrated from SourceForge to what was the name of it? Matthew or Robert may know. I'm just kind of blanking.
Maybe.
Huh? Oh no, the cloud service, really cheap. The one that Rod wanted to use.
Oh, DigitalOcean.
There you go, DigitalOcean. So the website is actually served off DigitalOcean now. The only files off that are going to be patches. But again, we consider that secure. And then the actual packages themselves are off SourceForge. Otherwise, we don't really download any other maybe audio files that we have for these meetings, I suppose. No other stuff.
And there's the user accounts on the forums, user accounts for DigitalOcean. And
no user accounts for DigitalOcean. That's a static. So only the static website is on there. So nothing. No, we have. That's not true, actually. Sorry, we have a wiki. We have a wiki, which is very outdated.
Doesn't someone pay DigitalOcean, and then that person who pays has an account?
Hmm?
Someone like, kind of like if you create an AWS account to pay your bill, you're also, how would the bill be paid to DigitalOcean?
DigitalOcean, like,
does someone have an account for that?
Yeah, because we did, that was an emergency thing. SourceForge broke. Like, seriously, our website would have been down for almost a month if we stayed on SourceForge. it was pretty bad. So after a couple of days, Rod actually migrated the site to that cloud service. I think it's a $5 a month thing that we're using now, so it's like pretty nominal.
Okay, so Ron has the admin account for DigitalOcean.
Well, we're all admins on that account, though. So myself, Rod, Matthew, and Robert. Okay. And we're kind of just getting used. We're learning how to use it, in all honesty, but it's working pretty well.
Yeah, this is the stuff like things like compliance and auditing. And guys, I hope one, this doesn't sound like a lot of work. It's something that.
No, we would love to have somebody come and, you know, look at everything we're doing and give us opinions on what we could do better and make it more secure. So, like, we are definitely trying to upgrade the wiki version that we have. We have a very outdated one, those kinds of things.
Okay.
But definitely, yeah. If you have thoughts, and like giving you, let us know.
Is it, Ray, can I send you, like a few questions and then play there in a couple of weeks we can have a call?
Yeah, that sounds great. Just let me know, and then I can explain where all the tools are and all that kind of stuff, and then you can give us some good opinions on what we need to be doing, and maybe even get you involved in doing it also, in all honesty. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a lot of infrastructure.
Yeah, and I'm trying to become, Matt, you know this, I'm trying to become a better, like, sysadm, because I got the AWS stuff down, and I'm good at Linux, but working with Asher, I was like, good, yeah, I don't know. I don't know shit about certain things. And like the SSL stuff, I'm trying to learn that like at the operating system layer. But only once I've done that, like I can look at the end-to-end architecture from users at the app level to all the stuff Asher worked on.
Yeah, that would be really good. And then like even taking it another layer, putting the other recommended setup, if folks don't want to run it on the cloud, you know, how should you set up OpenEMR in your practice? Don't run CCleaner, you know, things like that. Folks are, I'm sure, running CCleaner in small practices here in the state.
Yeah. That's a separate thing I wanted to work on, is like a security guide for OpenEMR. And then what I talked with Brady a second ago was like OpenEMR's internal architecture that we all use and stuff. Do those two distinctions make sense? One is a guide for OpenEMR software, but
they're both important. Obviously, the last thing you want to do is have people download a corrupt OpenEMR. So, yeah, they're both important.
Okay, but thanks for listening, everybody. That was all I had. And Brady, I'll send you the
great. Any other things before I? Stop recording.
If anybody is listening and they have a nephew or a niece or somebody in their life that is working on a marketing degree and would like to get some real experience, let me know. We really need some volunteers for OpenEMR marketing. I have a bunch of article ideas and I just don't have the time, and I really want to just kind of lead a few people and see the result of that, and everybody wins.
So I'll second that. If anyone's listening to this recording, we need marketing volunteers.
I know they're out there. We just need to find them.
Great. So I'll stop recording.